Órale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and today we've got un episodio muy especial in our Beat Writer series. We're bringing you not just one, but two writers covering the LA Chargers, and they're also partners on the fun Compas on the Beat podcast. Shout out to our buen amigo and her salty tío, Beto Duran, for first calling out your podcast to me. So saludos, Beto. Also to another good friend, Jeff Garcia on Real 92.3, big Charger fan. You better be listening to this because these guys are going to drop some knowledge. But our invitados, Gilbert Manzano writes for the LA Daily News and the Orange County Register. The Daily News is a special place for me because that's where I got my start in writing back in the 80s. And because head coach Brandon Staley calls him Gilberto, for the purpose of this show, we're going to be calling him Gilberto. He's also a fellow Matador, and we'll share a secret handshake, which is probably trying to find parking. Yes, you know very well. Fernando Ramirez writes for Sports Illustrated, which also is special for me because that's the magazine that I began to subscribe to when I was 14 years old and started to read long form for the first time and really start to get a dream about writing. And he's been covering them since the San Diego days. He just got his master's, so if I call him maestro here and there, you'll know why. And one of the things I'll want to find out if he is in fact named in honor of El Toro, Fernando Valenzuela. So, compas, hey, Gilberto, Fernando, welcome. Welcome to the Familia FFP podcast, guys. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having us on. It's been a long time coming. You've been a big supporter of Compas on the Beat. Like you mentioned, a fellow Matador. So I've been waiting to get on here, Jorge. I'm a little disappointed it took this long, but better late than never, right?
Well, I had to wait for you guys to, some of the OTAs, some of the news to happen so that you guys can, not have to be guessing so much so you can kind of look at this. But no, this has been great. This has been great. And Fernando, can you answer the question about the origin story of your name?
My father's name is Fernando also. So that's like the reason. So like, it's I'm the firstborn. So obviously it's handed down to the next generation. So it's something like that. It's funny. My dad actually doesn't like sports at all. So I actually got into sports because of my grandfather. So my mom's dad. So my dad isn't a sports fan at all. So every time I'm watching a game, he's like, okay, it's over. Can we watch a movie? I'm like, no, sorry. Another game's coming on. He's like, oh, pues, no paran en todo el día. And I'm like, nope. I was like, you know what it is.
Well,
Fernando never had the junior on his name. Where's Fernando Ramirez Jr.?
No, because I'm Fernando Juan Ramirez. He's just Fernando Ramirez.
Ah,
so, okay. Yeah. So Junior is gonna be my kid. So definitely planning on that one.
Keep the name going, huh?
Got you.
Typical, a great Latino tradition is name everybody. Yeah, my brother's named after our father. Two of my primos, their brothers are named after their fathers. So it's just, you gotta love Mexican families. But I got one request, and it's from Fernando right now. You have a signature opening for your show. Could you do one, grace Familia FFB, the Familia with your signature opening?
Yeah, I mean, Gilbert, is it okay?
I guess, man. You seem kind of tired for my face.
Hey, bro, it's been a long couple of days, but I got you. All right. What's up, bro?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, gracias. It's gracias.
Already
gracias.
Echoing into my ear.
You love it, though.
Yeah. Well, before we get into Charger stuff, where did you guys come up with the idea for Compas on the Beat? Because I love it. And I just as someone who's became a fan, also a fellow Latino, I love that you guys are mixing in the Charger stuff with your other sports and other outside passions, but also just kind of working in Latino references, the cultural references, just like the wallpaper on the wall, which is kind of what we go for here. So let me know. Talk to me, dígame.
For the origin story of Compas on the Beat, Fernando and I, obviously, we're Chargers beat reporters, so we saw each other a lot daily, and you probably already heard the story of the what's up, bro. Every time I walk into the Chargers headquarters, the media room there, it's a what's up, bro, right in my ear. So, we
kind of... It doesn't matter if he's talking to somebody, too.
Yeah, so I could be saying... And he's really in the back, too, so I'm trying to say hi to 10 people, and he's always trying to get my attention. He tries, like his favorite wrestler, Roman Reigns, acknowledge me. He's always, acknowledge me, I'm here. So a little drop for you there, Fernando. But we just kind of always had a connection. I guess it's kind of obvious seeing the two Mexicanos together, but we kind of had the same upbringing, same cultural, so we kind of obviously tend to gravitate towards each other. But you know, it's kind of funny, for the first year, you know, I was all about business. I was first on the Chargers beat report, and I was just trying to like learn everything and make sure I'm doing everything right, no messing around. I need to get my feet settled. I'm just kind of like the serious one. Fernando likes to kind of, you know, be a little more energetic and goof around a little bit. Actually, he's professional too. But Fernando's been around the team for a very long time. For me, the first year, it was just, all right, head down, you know, leave people alone. Don't chit chat. Don't mess around. Do your work, do your job. And then I think the following year, 2019, we went to Mexico City, Chargers against the Chiefs, El Estadio Azteca out there. And Fernando was so gracious. Like, he's like, hey, come hang out with me. Come hang out with my brother. Come see the pyramids. And that's where we kind of really started bonding. Like, okay, this guy's kind of cool. He's not just a big talker there. and that's where I got to know Fernando. And just slowly from there, our connection kind of grew. Obviously, you know, we bounced stories and ideas off each other. And did you catch that in the interview? Did you talk to that player? We also helped each other out in this type of business, being beat reporters, your competitors, your rivals. So it's kind of weird seeing two beat reporters doing a podcast. But, you know, we want to see each other win and prosper. But then I think it was earlier this year, maybe late last year, Fernando kept saying, how about we just, everything we talk about in person, why don't we just do it on a YouTube and maybe answer some questions in a Q&A. And from there, it kind of just started growing and growing. And I'm like, hey, you know what I've been thinking to do is a podcast. Everybody has a podcast. You know, people are saying they like our YouTube Q&A. So let's try it. And I'll let Fernando pick it up, because, you know, it feels like a long time, but it's only been 3 months. And from there, we've done a lot with this podcast in the last 3 months, and people have really enjoyed our connection.
Yeah, and like Gilbert was saying, I mean, we started the YouTube videos, and then we started noticing that we were getting 500-600 people watching him. And Gilbert, Gilbert was the one that told me, hey, how about a podcast? And I'm like, oh, I hadn't even thought about it. So I had skills from NBC, my time at NBC San Diego, where I knew how to edit. I could put stuff together. I could do fun stuff. And Gilbert obviously knows how to script write. He knows how to do all this other stuff. So I'm like, let's combine that and let's do this. So we ended up doing it. And Gilbert, obviously, boxing, baseball, all this other stuff. I love wrestling, football, basketball, like soccer. I'm into soccer as well, European soccer, anything kind of soccer. So Gilbert and I combined, we've done a lot of really cool things. I mean, we had a beat reporter from Spain on a couple of weeks ago, and he was just talking Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico de Madrid. And it was interesting because he kind of gave me at the end, I kind of got his personality to show a little bit, because we talked about the differences in America, how we cover sports here and how they cover sports. They're not allowed in the locker room at all. He's like, if I go into the locker room, I'm going to have these guys picking me up and taking me to the next to jail. And I'll probably be deported back to London. So I was like, oh, wow. And he's like, you guys are allowed in the locker room? I was like, yeah, but I mean, we sometimes complain. He's like, never complain about that. I'm like, yeah. Well, we complain because of something, like some players don't want to talk or stuff like that. He's like, never complain. He's like, we're behind a glass wall. They walk by, and if they want to talk to you, they'll talk. If not, adios. And I'm like, dang, my, that sucks. So yeah, so Gilbert and I have really combined. We've done fun stuff. I mean, we talk WrestleMania. We've talked SummerSlam is going to be in Vegas. All these boxing fights coming up. We had Chad Johnson a couple of weeks ago. So literally, I feel like Gilbert and I are just 3 months in. It feels like it's been a while, but I feel like we're finally starting to hit our stride, and we're really doing a lot of fun stuff. So I tell Gilbert, and I text him, and he's like, he just rolls his eyes, because I'm like, dude, I'm so hyped to do this week's episode of Compas. And he's like, bro, where do you get all this energy from? And I just started laughing. I mean, that's kind of how it is. Like, I'm the energy guy. Gilbert's the guy that tries to settle me down a little bit. So a couple of weeks ago, we did a Fast and Furious 9. He's like, don't you get tired of him? And I'm like, bro, you're being very disrespectful right now. And it's just fun stuff like that. So literally, he knows how to set me off. And he knows how to tick me off, where I like start getting all worked up and stuff. So we've had a lot of fun with it.
Well, I could also tell, you know, you wearing the San Diego Padres cap, it's kind of, I'm sure that's setting Gilberto off. It's getting me. But, you know, I will say, for me, lifelong Dodger fan, but I love it when the rivalry is good. And actually, with the Giants being good, even better. Todo mejor. I love it. My favorite is get it down to the last day of the season and the Giants losing. So everybody being good, but yeah.
It's a three-headed monster. Yeah, no, I remember, I think we started – I think we were a couple of episodes in, and then Gilbert gave me a lot of crap because the Dodgers went 2 out of 3 with the Padres down here. And then the 2 weeks later, I think the Padres went 3 for 4 yep. up there, and Tatis hit like 4 home runs over the weekend. And I had to plug it in a couple of times, and then I'm like, bro, us Fernandos, we're different. I'm like, we're different beasts. And he just gets a kick out of it. So, yeah, we've been going back and forth. And then in a couple of weeks, I think the Dodgers come down here, so I'm trying to convince them to come down and us do a little something special from Petco Park.
Well, he's still Tatis is still a notch below Valenzuela on the Fernando tier, so he's got to do it about 10 more years. So, yeah.
Well, he has that contract, so yeah, he's gonna have to do it.
He is. Well, I know you guys got a lot going on. You're in the middle of the early mini camp. Gilberto, I think you mentioned that you play some fantasy football. Fernando, do you?
No.
Okay. I
was kicked out of my league a couple of years ago because I won 5 years in a row. So they're like, "Well, you're a beat reporter. You know all this stuff." So my friends kicked me out of our league. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty sad, but I still show up for the draft party and everything.
Hey, you know what? Hey, you guys, feel free. You're invitados to Labor Day weekend. You can join La Familia up here. There's going to be tons of food, tons of entertainment, plenty of cerveza. There'll be plenty of soda and water, Fernando, if you want to join. So,
is there going to be avocados for Gilbert?
There will be avocados for Gilbert. Oh, and I will say, I have to. You guys have been so open about the Mexican thing that you don't like. With Gilberto, it's avocados. Fernando, the drinking, which I honestly don't. I respect anyone who doesn't drink. So
you know what's funny? People came at Gilbert more than they came at me. Gilbert thought they were gonna come at me for not drinking and all that stuff. People came more at Gilbert for not liking avocados.
It's a scam. It's a ripoff. You're paying $2.50 for extra avocado. So. You know, I'm the only smart one in the world, I guess.
I was talking about that with a friend of mine who was yesterday. We have an avocado tree, and he said he didn't like avocados till he was in his 20s. And he said, "Man, I can't believe how many avocados I just threw away that fell to the ground that were like gold." And I was like, "You could make that's money. That's money." So, compas, I'm gonna divulge. I'm not a fan of Menudo. I'm sorry. Oh, wow. I hope people don't come at me for that one.
I can't really, knock that one because every time I prefer pozole. Menudo is like, I don't know, it has to be really hungover. It has to be a Sunday. It has to be a very specific situation. But for me, pozole all the way. So I can't hate on that, Jorge.
I like it the Jalisco way with labio, callo, all that stuff. Like throw that all in there. Oh, my mom actually makes some bomb menudo. I had some last weekend, so I was I love menudo.
Oh man, I'm more of the albondigas, and if ooh. I need to if I yeah, albondigas is all.
In fact,
I have my mom's recipe, so if you guys want it, I sat down and wrote down everything. So if you guys want it, you'll have food for a week.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding. No, I said Gilbert doesn't know how to cook.
Hey, I don't either, and just following these step by step, it helped. But yeah, no.
How do you learn in a Mexican household when you got la mamás y las tías, trying to feed you, and the grandma trying like they just relentless give you food and food. I never had time to cook. They're like feeding me.
Bro, I wasn't drinking with my uncles and all that. I was in the kitchen watching the way they prepared everything, and that's how.
You never had that tía, the grandma like just force feeding you like. All full and then just
bro, look at me. Of course, I do it. I did.
But how do you have time to learn to cook?
I want to learn how to do the recipes and stuff. That's why I like became good on the grill and I got myself a smoker and everything. I want to learn all that stuff, not just like grilling. I want to learn how to do that other stuff. So I've learned. I learned how to make a lot of that.
He's pretty good, Jorge. I'll give him credit for that. I usually don't give credit to Fernando, but he's good on the grill and the smoker.
Oh man! Well, I tell you, you're talking about the tías. I got 7 of them, including and my mom on top of them. I'll be like, "Mijo, cala mis tamales. Aquí está esto. Okay. Oh, I got yo hice ham. Yo hice esto. We get like 7 turkeys at Thanksgiving or something like that, and it's just Thankfully, I like to work out because I need to.
And everybody's passed out. All the men are passed out on the couch watching football. Yep.
And you were saying about how learning how to cook. I mean, to me, the most frustrating thing was, you know, I'd ask my mom, so how much rice do you put in? She'd go, this much. Yeah. should be a handful. I'm like, well, how much is that? I literally would have her. We'd measure it. That's how I got her recipe. So
yeah, no, my grandmother's mole. My mom learned how to make it, but like she would be like, oh, just grab this much. My mom's like, no. My hands are different than your. My grandma was small. She was five flat. My mom's 5'8". So yeah, my mom's like, no, you're gonna tell me how much, and she's like, hey, this much. So yeah, I understand where you're going with that.
Well, I know we could talk about, you know, Mexican food for days, and I do have one question at the closing, but you know, I want to be respectful of your guys' time because you guys are in the middle of mini camp, and let's talk a little Chargers. And I guess we got to start with the guy who comes on in emergency in week two, Justin Herbert. I'm watching that game, and you guys are in the stands, probably found out as much as I did. First off, how surprised were you that he went toe to toe with Patrick Mahomes that day, and then to go on and have what I think is the greatest rookie season for a quarterback ever?
Jorge, not trying to hijack your show. Ask Gilbert when he saw Justin in the game.
You know, I was very surprised that he was in there. Like, I was actually, you know, I tell the story a lot because as a beat reporter, you get really like into the game towards the end because you got to follow the story. But the first half, you kind of a little chill, like before all the pressure comes at you in the second half. And the Chargers love to give you pressure as, you know, one score games and down to the last minute. So as a beat reporter, I'm just, you know, traumatized for the Chargers. But so I like to chill the first quarter. And, you know, I also like to listen to the radio broadcast, and I'm not really watching closely just yet. Like, it's like, I think it's Matt Money. It's been like, that's number 10. That's Justin Herbert. I'm like, what are you talking about? I look on the field and it's Justin Herbert. I'm thinking, okay, Wildcat. And then I start like, okay, maybe he's going to start. He threw a pass. Oh, okay. So it's going to happen. But wait, what happened to Tyrod Taylor? So my mind was just racing. And I hate it. I pretty much missed the entire first drive. I did notice a big hit he had on the Chiefs, the linebacker. That was kind of crazy. And then I look up and I finally figure out what's going on with Tyrod Taylor, and he's going into the end zone. So, you know, to answer your question, I was very shocked and I was very impressed because when that game went through four quarters, you were kind of expecting, like, you know, some missed balls. You know, he's getting sacked crazy, but no, he's doing crazy plays and touchdowns and very accurate. He has a very insane throw to Keenan Allen that we forget about because he had like 20 of those throws later on in the season. But you know, he had that one costly rookie mistake with the interception. But overall, you know, it was just a fascinating debut. And it's one that I feel like, hopefully I'm not living in the moment or it's like in the present, because I feel like in 10 years, I could tell the story. And it's such a unique kind of debut that I could say I was there and there was no fans in the stands and joy. It was just me and Fernando up there chilling.
And you know what I'm sad about? That's the only place where Gilbert and I do not sit together. We feel like on opposite sides. So it's like we look over and we just say what's up or whatever. Oh, we do get lunch together though. That we do.
Okay. I need a break from this guy. I need to focus.
So I thought the exact same thing. Wildcat. Anthony Lynn's probably trying to do something different. But no, it's incredible. The one throw, and I remember I interviewed his dad for this. He rolls to his left, and he has Mike Williams open in the end zone. He throws it. He underthrows it a little bit. And the Honey Badger comes up and Tyrann Mathieu comes up and smacks it down. And his dad's like, dude, that's the Honey Badger. It's not like you're playing one of these other universities. Like, you're supposed to complete that pass, kid. And the dad was getting fired up. He's like, you complete that pass and you probably beat the reigning defending champs. And I was like, oh, wow. But yeah, no, it was incredible. And to really see, I mean, that's what I told Gilbert, like, we could be part of this. Oh my God. Like, we were there his first season. No, like Gilbert said, no fans in the stands, and we got to cover this kid and his ascension to maybe be one of the better quarterbacks in the last few years.
We're, you know, a lot of times quarterbacks take that big jump in the second year. You know, one Pro Football Focus had him rated actually fairly low playing from a clean pocket, which you guys know didn't happen very often last year because the line was injured. Is there a place that can jump? Because I think the fantasy community is hyped about Justin Herbert in 2021?
Oh, no. So you're asking if there's a place where he can make better strides? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely in the pocket, because a lot of the times he had to move, because like you said, there was a lot of times where Brian Bulaga in the first, what was it, like the first 8 weeks of the season, Brian didn't play all that much. And great if he did, it was one play and then he was out. So Trey Turner didn't play. So he really had a lot of different guys in there. So definitely I feel like his in-pocket presence is going to improve, because a lot of times it was eight-step drops because he had to back up that much. Man, that Tampa Bay game, and that's the game where I really told Gilbert, bro, this kid's special. That Tampa Bay game and that New Orleans game. I don't know if you saw in that Tampa Bay game, the touchdown that he throws to Tyron Johnson, he had Vita Vea, and I can't remember who else, right on top of him. And he waited until he got wide open, and then that's when he passed it. The one to Jalen Guyton, that 70-yard touchdown, it was an all-out blitz. He had everybody on him, and he waited until he knew exactly what point to do it. So I think his in-pocket presence will get better. He has Corey Linsley now. Rashawn Slater's going to be in there. Brian Bulaga hopefully will be, for the team's sake, will be healthy. Matt Filer. The questions are really the two guards, Matt Filer and Ode Abuje. What's the name? Hymus?
Yeah,
whichever Hymus. One. Yeah.
Oh, so yes.
We don't know who's going to be the starter there, but but if the guards can really hold up and give Justin a pocket, Justin will be able to improve that way. But really, anywhere around the other side of the field, I mean, the kid's good. The kid knows exactly what he's doing. But it's just in the pocket is going to be interesting to see how he's able to hold up and not have flashbacks to what happened last season.
You know, it's kind of wild. The Chargers really revamped the offensive line. So the offensive line should be better, you would think, with Corey Linsley and Rashawn Slater and all the guys that Fernando named. But I still want to see the magician, Justin Herbert, running for his life and making these insane throws of Donald Parham and Jalen Guyton, Tyron Johnson, all these no-name guys. That was kind of fascinating to watch. But, yes, imagine what he could do with a clean pocket and yes, maybe pocket awareness and maybe don't run for your life and just, sometimes it's okay to dump it off to Austin Eckler. And that's what I want to see, Justin Herbert do is, he has such a great rocket arm. Don't just settle for the Austin Eckler, Jared Cook dump off. I want to see deep balls. So find that kind of middle ground when making it work for Justin Herbert. And for me, it's just being consistent because he's set the bar so high, you kind of expect a little regression. I know Fernando and his brother hate that I bring this up because, it's a new coaching staff. And it's a new offensive coordinator. We don't know how this is going to look. So
I've seen it.
Sure.
It's 4 years at Oregon. I've seen it one year in the NFL.
We have, but it's just the NFL is different. Teams watch film, they adjust, and second years could be sometimes, it could spiral for a young quarterback. But, yes, I'm with Fernando. I'm just saying some concern. Sorry, I'm getting, so into it, is that, with Justin Herbert, he was so great a year ago that, yeah, he was probably like Patrick Mahomes, so they probably won't be a big-time regression. But the bar just set so high, and with a new coaching staff, I'm just a little concerned. Just be consistent, and he'll be okay, but everything I saw a year ago, I'm not that worried about it, but it's just that history shows that sometimes with a new coaching staff, there could be a few steps back.
What I told Gilbert too, Jorge, real quick, is that the Chargers did the best thing they could have done by hiring Staley. I mean, Staley's really going to show him being a former quarterback, defensive mind, and that's what a lot of the coaches – I was impressed yesterday, Gilbert, I forgot to tell you this, with all the coaches talking about how Staley was offensive-minded in college but then turned defensive-minded, that's helping a lot of the things that they're doing, especially when they're in the meetings and all that. But it seems like Justin and him have built a really good relationship. When Justin got when Brandon got hired, the second person he called, because, you have to call your wife first, he called,
of course.
He called Justin and let him know that he was coming in. What I heard from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick was Bill would sit him down during the offseason and he would break down all the film that he had. So I feel like that's really what Brandon's going to do with Justin, break down all the film from last year and show him areas that he can improve, what he can do better, what he needs to work on, stuff like that. So I feel like that's really going to help Justin out. And hopefully he'll advise him to not get haircuts from the conditioning coach.
You know what? As a member of the Bald Brotherhood, I'm like, if you can have flowing locks, grow them as long as you can, So enjoy the hair. Enjoy the hair while it lasts.
Yeah,
both exactly. Of you. Yeah, I know Deion Sanders loves your hair, Fernando. So
yeah.
I, you know, you guys talked about the new offensive coordinator coming, Joe Lombardi coming in from bringing in the Saints offense, and you guys wrote about it, this a little bit in, you know, last week, how they're starting to install the offense. Looking at Austin Eckler a little bit in that Alvin Kamara, that dual threat, not a guy who's going to pound the ball, you know, 250 times, taking 250 rushes, but maybe getting 150 to 200, but maybe getting like 100 targets. Is that kind of, I mean, similar to the kind of like the, I think it was what, 2018, 2019, when he had that huge year and almost got 1,000 yards. Is that kind of like what we can look at from Eckler this year?
You know, I think so with Austin. I know Fran's kind of shaking his head, but we forgot maybe last year with Austin Eckler, he messed up his hamstring and he wasn't the same player. So everybody got hurt when they drafted him in the first or second round of fantasy football for Austin Eckler. But we had him on the podcast and he was telling us how he was rolling the first month of the season. And I went back to look at the stats. I'm like, these are some really good numbers. He was still, you know, doing what he did in 2019. It's just, he came back from the hamstring. Yeah, I think he missed 7 games. And then when you come back from a hammy, when it's really that serious, you're not the same player. You can't make the same cuts. You don't have the same burst. You can't hit the hole the same. So I think with Austin Eckler, if he's healthy and stays healthy, I could definitely see it another 2019 year. But yeah, maybe it's a little concerning because you want Justin Herbert to push that ball down the field because he has a rocket arm. But also too, like when you, sometimes when you just give it to Austin Eckler in a screen, he makes a big play too. From we remember that that Philip Rivers in a video clip in Jacksonville, it was a 90-yard touchdown. So that's what Austin Eckler does. Yes. So sometimes it's okay to give it to him, but that's why I keep saying figure out that balance. But I think you mentioned Alvin Kamara and Joe Lombardi. I think they're gonna, you know, feed Austin Eckler a lot. And one thing I like about Austin, he knows he's not a three-down back. He knows he's not this physical bruiser. He likes help. He likes a change of pace running back. So I think everybody knows what he does best. So for me, I think he's one of the safest players you could draft because he's going to touch the ball as a receiver at least and get his targets, and he can make up for it on the ground as well. Maybe he'll be a goal line back and he'll get vulture, but he always gets the yards and he pads the stats.
I disagree a little bit. I agree that Austin's a great player and he brings a lot to this team. I think the Chargers are going to be more like the San Francisco 49ers when it comes to the way they run the football. I think that's why they have Justin Jackson, Josh Kelly. One of these guys isn't going to make it out of camp. Larry Roundtree to me is going to make it out. But I think Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson are going to fight for that next spot.
Spicy hot take there, Fernando.
Well, I mean, and it's going to be Austin. But I feel like they're going to have, you know what the 49ers had when they went to the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. They had different running backs running the football. They had, in different situations, they had different guys. I think that's what I heard. I can't remember who said it yesterday, but somebody kind of mentioned that, and one of the coaches, and I thought to myself, huh, this could be exactly what the 49ers did. Like, hey, in this situation, we like Austin. In this situation, we like Larry. In this situation, we like Josh Kelly. So I feel like it's going to be a really healthy rotation of running backs. And Austin's numbers will be up there because Austin does what Austin does. But I don't feel like they're going to have him play as much as they did. Hell, last year, we saw it when he came back. As soon as he comes back against Buffalo, how many snaps did he take, Gilbert? 50? Yeah, the next day we talked to him and he felt ran over. He's like,
that's right.
I can't believe I ran this many, or I was on the field so much. I don't think the Chargers are going to try and do that. I think they're going to try and rotate this and do something with it so that they can keep these guys fresh. That's what it sounds like to me, that all these guys they want to keep fresh, the defensive line, linebackers, a secondary, I feel like they're going to want a healthy rotation of all these guys to keep them fresh. And I feel like that's what we're going to see with the running backs this season.
Could one guy from the Kelly Jackson that you, Fernando, you mentioned Roundtree is going to make the team. One of those guys be someone who's
going to see them eyes over there. You don't think Roundtree makes it?
He's a 6th round pick, man. So it's not a guarantee.
I love it.
Joshua Kelly was a 4th round pick. And I like Joshua Kelly a year ago in training camp. He just lost his confidence. If he could get that back, he could be a stud. But yeah, it's very crowded. You might be right, Fernando. But remember a year ago, Tom Telesco had like 5 running backs on the roster. So it's not insane to keep all of them. I can't figure out who it could be, who could be left out. Because Justin Jackson, when he's on the field, he's a playmaker. You see his yards per run, it's always like 8 yards. So
that first word that you used?
If he's on the field, yeah. Justin Jackson. You need to stay healthy. So it may be, but I don't see him. He's too talented to get cut too. So I don't see who. Maybe you might be right though. There might be too many running backs to do. Because a year ago I told myself, why are there so many running backs? But they're on there. But I really don't know who to pick. I think it's Roundtree is a rookie. And yeah, you might be right, Fernando. The coaching staff, if they draft you, you have an advantage. Joshua Kelly was not drafted by Brandon
Staley. And it's their first draft.
Yeah, it's in the first draft. But I just think Joshua Kelly, I don't think you give up on him too soon.
No, my bad. Go ahead.
No, but I just can't figure out who it could be. But you're right. It's gonna be a very good competition. And you got me thinking now with the 49ers scheme. You're probably right. It could be one of those teams that you hate as a fantasy football owner because you don't know who's gonna be the hot hand every week. So I remember for a few years ago, I didn't know who to pick for the 49ers. So I actually have some 49er fans, friends in my league who just draft like five 49er running backs and they hog them and they kind of just keep a close tab and play whoever is hot, and it usually works out for them.
See, this is what it's all about, Jorge. This is what Compas is all about. Like, we throw things off of each other and we're like, oh, okay, maybe, yeah, that's the way. So we like to brainstorm a lot and I mean, we each have our own opinions, but at the same time, like, there is things that we're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Like that stuff could happen. So that's the best part about the way we do our podcast, is that it's just, we bounce ideas off of each other. I give them crap. Like I said, like a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about going to SummerSlam, and I'm like, you got to acknowledge Roman Reigns. That's a wrestler. He likes to be acknowledged. And I'm like, you better acknowledge him. And then he puts, I acknowledged him. And the guy that Paul Heyman, the guy that's with Roman Reigns, actually liked the tweet. And I was like, there you go, Gilbert. I was like, he, Paul Heyman knows that you need to acknowledge him. So we just, like I said, we just have fun. But going back to that, yeah, exactly the point. I don't see them giving up on Josh Kelly. I feel like they like him a lot. I feel like Austin likes him. I feel like the rest of the running book group likes him. He's a positive guy. I just, to me, right now, if I looked at it, Justin Jackson, if he can't get out of training camp healthy, then it's going to be rough for him to make the team. But I see what you say. He is super talented. He had that rookie year where everybody was hurt. And against Pittsburgh, against Kansas City, he made a name for himself. And it just hasn't been the same ever since then.
And I feel honored to have witnessed Compas on the Beat, just kind of like, the spark happening right here on the show. So thank you. Thank you. No, that was awesome. I'm a big Joshua Kelly fan too. I was really rooting for him. I hated seeing the fumbles kind of happen for him. So
he's a good kid too.
Oh, great. That's good to hear. That's good. Yeah. That's all. Isn't that the thing when you get that insider access? When it's like, he's a good kid, he's a good guy. So it's like, that's one of the things that you want.
And I think we got him halfway through the year, and like, he was kind of like, he was bummed out, but he was still smiling. He's like, I just got to stay positive. I just got to do this. I just got to do that. And I think it was right before that Buffalo game. And then that Buffalo game, he pulled out like a 45-yard run. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, and I think he got a touchdown too. So I was like, oh, there you go. Like, maybe it's a little bit more. But then like later in the season, we really didn't see him all that much carry the football. So it was just interesting to see the way the dynamic kind of happened last year with Kelly. But I mean, honestly, the team's going to need him this year. They're going to need all these running backs to really put their foot in the ground and help. Because like Gilbert said, Justin is going to – yeah, you want Justin to throw 50 times a game for fantasy owners, but the team isn't going to want that. The team's going to want Justin to throw about 30 times. They're going to have – like, and people think that just because Brandon Staley's coming in, it's not going to be like what Anthony Lynn kind of liked, like the 55-45. That's exactly how I think it's going to be. They're going to try and have a balanced offense. They're going to try and run the ball as much as they throw the ball. It's not going to be, oh, Justin, go out there and score us all these points. No, they're going to want to keep the balance. You're going to want to keep defenses guessing so that the play action works, so that other stuff works. So I just don't see – I see it similar to the point where they're going to be running and passing the ball almost exactly 51-49, stuff like that. 51-49, my bad.
Let's talk about the receivers a little bit. Keenan Allen had such a huge year. He had a great connection with him. But one of the things, I think it was in one of your latest articles, both of you in one of your latest articles, you talked about Mike Williams going into that X receiver role, which was the Michael Thomas role with the Saints. I mean, obviously, this is a guy who totaled over 100 receptions several years. How do you see? I mean, I could see Keenan Allen getting close to 150 targets again. Do you see it happening again? But maybe targets jumping up for Mike Williams.
Mike Williams is so tough to kind of evaluate because he's so talented. But then you look at the stat sheet, like. I just saw yesterday that he's never had more than 49 catches in a season. Like, that sounds so low for a wide receiver of his caliber. And he's only had 1,000 yards in a season once in his 4-year career. But What Mike Williams does is in the fourth quarter, crunch time. He's probably the best wide receiver in the two-minute drill when you're down 3 points or when you're up ahead and you're trying to maintain a lead. He bailed them out a lot in 2019 with Phillip Rivers. I remember so many crazy plays. He had a few crazy plays a year ago with Justin Herbert. Fernando likes to always bring up how Mike Williams got a lot of chemistry with Justin Herbert towards the end of last year in that four-game winning streak when Keenan Allen was out. So maybe that could be a jumping point where finally Mike Williams puts it together, 10 touchdowns, 1,000 yards receiving, and maybe around 80 catches for him. But it's just we've seen it for 4 years. He's very inconsistent. But, you know, when you play so well in the fourth quarter, maybe it's okay to forget that and just kind of acknowledge the guy how he is. He's a jump ball machine. He's going to get you a first down when you need it. But when you hear Joe Lombardi say that he's willing to bet that he's going to get nice numbers, then I think I could listen to Joe Lombardi. He's the one calling the play. So he's going to say he's going to put money on it, then I'll believe it. So I think for fantasy owners who I know there's many out there who's drafted Mike Williams thinking or stashing he's going to do well. I think this could be the year because it could be also a contract year. He's betting on himself because he doesn't have the money. He got paid this year because he's getting $15 million for a fifth-year option. So that must be nice. But now you're thinking ahead for the future. So I think for him, he could probably see a nice payday. But it'll be interesting to see in training camp if Mike Williams and the Chargers even kind of engage for a contract extension. See if that happens because Tom Telesco doesn't like to negotiate during the season. So if it doesn't get done before the regular season, Mike Williams could be a free agent at the end of the year. So when you're a free agent, you usually kind of play your best football that season.
Gilbert lied right there. He didn't do it the way Joe Lombardi did it. I expect Mike Williams. I'll bet on him. He had gotten him off the treadmill. So, like, they brought him in for the interview. He's all sweaty. He's like, I can bet that Mike Williams is going to have a good season.
He's probably lying to us with all that sweat, huh?
No, but I've been a huge – and Gilbert knows. I've been a huge Mike Williams, like, supporter in the sense of I think I know what Mike brings to the team. I just feel like the offense really was catered more towards Keenan, Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler, Hunter Henry in years past. And really, I feel like they need to make Mike more of a focal point because of how dangerous he is. At times last year, we saw it. I think it was against the Jets. He does a drag route, and he ends up catching the ball. He shakes off both this corner and the safety, slams them down, and runs into the end zone for the touchdown. So I just feel like Mike could really do a lot of damage if focused more. And that's what it seems like Joe Lombardi is going to do. Was it because I asked him the question, or is it because he already knew? I don't know. But definitely, I think that Lombardi is going to try and do that because he knows how important Mike is going to be to this offense. I mean, literally, and that's what I Gilbert and I always talk about. Right now, it's Keenan and Mike, and then there's a huge gap. We don't know who the third guy is going to be. We don't know. Yeah, Jalen Guyton and Tyron Johnson had okay seasons last year. They had some plays, but there were plays where they didn't really play well. There was games. And then you have Josh Palmer. Why? I don't know why I keep on trying to call him Jordan Palmer. Josh Palmer it looks like he's going to be a solid piece of this offense this year. We don't know, obviously, because we haven't been able to so we'll see more of him in training camp. But it is going to be really interesting to see the way they kind of try and put Mike this year. Last year, like Gilbert said, in New Orleans, Keenan's out. Mike stepped up, and I think he had 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. So Mike really is a red zone threat. He's a big play guy. He if the Chargers can use him a lot better this year, the way they kind of used him that year where in 2019 where he had 1,000 yards, I think they'll do a lot better. But I really see a big year from 81 this year, like Gilbert said, because of the contract extension. And then obviously because I think this offense is going to change a lot.
Now, is Keenan Allen one of the most underrated, like, great receivers in the game?
I believe so. I mean, we talked to Chad Johnson last week for Compass, and he said it. He said Keenan Allen is underrated. I feel like he does so much. He's one of the best route runners in the NFL. He just said the only thing is Keenan's not as – how would you say it, Gilbert? Not as out there as other receivers. Yeah, like
boisterous, right?
Yeah, boisterous. Like, he doesn't talk. He doesn't celebrate. Like, Keenan will celebrate, but it's like little dances like this. He's like, if you went over the top like I did – because you have to remember, too, Chad Johnson was in Cincinnati. I mean, no, and I'm being honest, like Cincinnati is not Los Angeles. If he did that stuff here, then you would get him on SportsCenter, you get him on different places, and people would be noticing him a lot more. The thing is, Keenan will catch 9 passes for 50 or for like 70 yards. And he's not the three catches for 100 yards kind of receiver. So I think that's what kind of rubs a lot of fantasy owners and a lot of people the wrong way. But I think Keenan's that guy that does all the hard work, gets you into the end or gets you near the end zone, and then maybe it's capped off by Hunter Henry or Mike Williams or Austin Eckler or somebody else.
Well, speaking of, you know, Hunter Henry left and he left to New England and got Jared Cook coming into the Chargers. Can he see the same amount of volume, or do you think a lot of that volume is going to go to Eckler and the other two receivers kind of spread around?
Yeah, I think there's too many weapons to get, you know, force feed Jared Cook. And I think Jared Cook knows that. And his numbers weren't really high a year ago either, but he still knows how to score in the red zone when he's around the, you know, the 20-yard line. He knows how to find his way into the end zone and score, because I think he's one of the top tight ends in terms of touchdowns. So I think that's where he'll kind of find his role. And they also have, you know, younger guys like Donald Parham Jr. And Trey McKitty, who might, you know, break the rotation. In terms of those two guys, whoever could block the best, they'll be on the field because they need a blocking tight end. Jared Cook is not going to be that guy. He's your red zone guy, maybe your guy on third down to get a first down as well. But when you have Austin Eckler, you have Keenan Allen, you have Mike Williams, and you know Justin Herbert likes to spread the ball around too. And I don't see giant numbers for Jared Cook, but he could be consistent in the red zone and give you. And the thing about tight ends, like, it's kind of like a graveyard sometimes in the waiver wire. Like if your top tight end gets hurt, you're kind of like, you know, left, you're like looking for another tight end. And there's not that many tight ends out there. But if you need one for the week for a spot start, and Jared Cook could get a touchdown for 7 points, and you'll take it at that point. So I think he could be that guy and be a backup, and he could have a decent season. But Fernando, I don't want to cut. Sorry, Jorge, I don't want to cut you off, but I had to head out soon. Are we okay to end it?
Can we do one quick one on? You guys answered a couple of my other questions, but just one more. Favorite taco meat.
That's only by 11.
Okay. Your favorite taco meats, guys.
Fernando?
That's my.
Oh, you know, lately I've been liking carne asada con chorizo and with cheese. So, like, there's this place in Tijuana that I go to, and they do it like they don't do the chorizo like cut up, kind of like you do huevos con chorizo. They do it like they kind of cut it up differently. So it's like little pieces on there. So it's just amazing. That's kind of been my go-to lately.
Oh man.
Yeah.
For me, it's I don't know if it's basic, but how can you go away from carne asada? I love carne asada. I always, you know, got to get four of those. But then I also love al pastor too. So maybe when I was like during my poor days when I didn't have much money, you know, I'll get three carne asada and one al pastor, always one al pastor. But now, you know, with combos on the beat, we're trying to be high rollers. I'm making like 20 tacos and be like Fernando. So 10 al pastor, otros 10 más de carne asada, put all of it, the piña, cilantro.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you put pineapple on it?
Oh, I need all that. So I can't decide.
Pineapple on pizza?
Oh, yes. I love pineapple. Okay. I don't care what you guys say about pizza.
No. I'm with you.
Okay. I thought we'd get attacked before I head out here.
I love pineapple on pizza. I love pineapple. Like, pineapple on everything is good.
Yes, thank God we all agree there. I don't get that whole argument there. But yes, I love carne asada. I can't really give up on it. It's like when I get Chinese food. I love orange chicken, but I got to try something else too, you know. But I got to get orange chicken. So carne asada is always a must, and I always got to get al pastor too. But I love all types of meat. So, you know, the more the better. I've tried everything, so I can't really hate one. Actually, there's not one that I don't like.
Oh, man. Yeah. You guys mentioned carne asada is mine. So I'm with you on that, guys.
You like guys,
what was that?
Sesos.
I don't know if I tried that one. What body part is that?
Brain.
Oh, yeah.
Omar, you know what? Omar Ruiz, he, you guys had him on in your current show. He talked about, you know, introducing people to sesos. And I've had the tacos de cabeza before I really knew what they were about. And I was like, oh, this is so good. And then when I found out, I couldn't. My dad used to buy a bunch of them.
Is that cabeza and sesos, or is that a different thing?
No, that's the same thing.
Okay. That's what I go.
They just call it cabeza so that they don't like
freak you out.
Move it out and people don't like deteriorate. Like, don't want to not eat it. So
okay, that's why. Yeah. That's the one I hear.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, guys, I know you guys got to get out. I'm so thankful that you guys did this. Eso es, you know, as we close out our show, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure Independent Podcast gets out to the Familia community. Please make sure to subscribe. Check, leave us a review at YouTube. Our YouTube page is open and wherever you get your podcasts, and you can find original content, including an article on this on FamiliaFFB.com coming up in the next few days. Remember, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at FamiliaFFB. Guys, where can they follow you?
They can find us on YouTube, Compas on the Beat, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere. Compas, so you see Compas on the Beat.
Turn on you gotta promote it. You want to. Go ahead, do it.
Promote.
You know
what you want to promote? Myself?
No, you know which one you want to promote. You know what streaming or which social media app you want to promote.
Yo sé.
Oh, TikTok. Well, not yet. we're on together, so I won't do individual stuff. So I'll say Compas on the Beat. We are on Instagram also. We have a page there, YouTube, all that. But, yeah, so you want to follow me on TikTok. I make good videos there too. So gil.sportsbeats.
I love it. I love it.
He's an influencer.
I love it. I love it. Fernando, you want to give a shout-out to your Twitter page?
Oh, yeah, I'm at Real F Ramirez. Gilbert Manzano is at GManzano24. So, and that's my same Instagram page, at Real F Ramirez. I think Gilbert's at...
I have like four different ones.
GManzano NFL? No.
Yeah, you got it. Good memory. Oh,
there you go. So there you go.
Muy bien. Muy bien. Well, you guys can... Everybody.
Appreciate you having us on, honestly. Thank this you, was Jorge. A lot of fun.
Hey, compas, thank you. Everybody, you can find me at Jorge Martin 17, compas, Fernando, Gilberto, thank you so much. And everybody, remember, todos somos familia. Salud.